A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll head over to Seattle, where the Seattle Symphony is preparing to open a new venue specifically designed to bring together technological advances with the creativity of new artists and new music, and hopefully excite and attract new audiences. My guests will be Symphony President and CEO Krishna Tyagarajan, Vice President of Artistic Planning and Creative Projects Elena Dubinets, and the Symphony's Composer-in-Residence, Derek Bermel, as we talk about some of the possibilities this venue will offer the Symphony and the community. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Composer Tan Doon, whose accolades include an Oscar and Grammy Award for the music for the film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, will be the new dean of the Bard College Conservatory beginning in July. In a statement, Bard said his duties will include furthering the conservatory's mission of teaching young musicians and deepening their understanding of music's connection to history, art, culture, and society, and also to foster connections between Eastern and Western studies at the conservatory. Born in a village in China's Hunan province, Tan Doon has written music for opera, orchestra, and movies, including works that bring in a variety of sound experiences, such as water, paper, and stone. Recordings of his operas Marco Polo and the First Emperor were nominated for Grammy Awards. He earned his master's in composition at the Central Conservatory of Music in Beijing and his doctorate in musical arts at Columbia University. Musicians of the Cleveland Orchestra has reached a 3-year agreement with management, providing for a 2% annual increase during the course of the contract that runs through the 2020-2021 season. According to a statement from the orchestra, the agreement was approved by the musicians late last month. The contract also provides for annual increases in retirement benefits and greater life insurance and long-term disability benefits. The musicians did agree to contribute a greater amount each year to their health insurance plans. In the statement, Jonathan Sherwin, chairman of the orchestra committee that represented the musicians, called the negotiations cordial and civil. The orchestra last month marked its 100th anniversary. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. When the Seattle Symphony set about modernizing its community and education wing in its home of Ben Arroyo Hall, the decision was made to create a space that uses new technology and design to expand its musical and performance opportunities, including a renewed commitment to new music and new artists. The upcoming opening of that venue, Octave 9 Reisbeck Music Center, in March, underscores that commitment to contemporary musical performance. The Symphony will host a 24-hour music marathon of contemporary music, curated by participating musicians, composers, and artists. In addition, the Symphony's composer-in-residence, clarinetist Derek Bermel, has curated a series of concerts and community programs showcasing new commissions, including an exploration of the connections between classical and jazz music in America. The center will also continue to house the Symphony's community and education programs, such as sensory-friendly concerts. Krishna Tyagarajan, who joined the Symphony as president and CEO this past September, said Octave 9 supports several aspects of the Symphony's mission and commitment to the local and musical communities.
Because it's such an advanced space, both from an audio and from a digital perspective, I think it gives us a wonderful new tool to engage with the community, both from a community and education perspective, but also just cutting-edge commissions and composers and new ideas of what music, you know, in the next century should be and how we should experience it and, you know, all the sensory experiences that you can have in this space. It's just allows you to think completely outside the box. And I think for classical organizations, that's long overdue for us to get into that mindset.
So what are some of the some of the vision you have in terms of where this could take you, what types of partnerships and perhaps things that are just already starting to come together because you have this as an option?
From an international perspective, I think it's going to create new relationships with young and established composers, because it will allow them to imagine their music in different ways in the space. And I'm especially looking forward, I mean, Derek is going to do wonderful work there, but I'm also looking forward to people like Heiner Goebbels, who is has been very active with the Ruhr Triennale in my former home in Germany, to come here and experience this environment. I think one of the things that I find very exciting is when we open the space back up to our education projects, because during construction we had to hold off on some of those things. But those projects will allow the kids to really imagine music in a different way, but it allows us to also introduce them acoustically to a lot more possibilities than what the old room had in store. Keep in mind that with the Meyer Constellation sound system, you can recreate some really amazing acoustics. I think one of the challenges that I've always felt, especially with education and community work, is that very often when you're going out into the field, you're having to make do with sometimes suboptimal acoustical spaces, you know, classrooms and things like that. But in this particular case, you can add a whole new dimension to the sound experience that just wasn't there before. And I think that is really going to engage some people very differently from the usual classroom experience.
Well, I know that Seattle certainly has really doubled down when it comes to community involvement. How do you see this adding additional opportunities? What are some types of programs that you think can bring a broader spectrum of people in?
So I'm hopeful that we can make a connection with our Young Composers Workshop, where we really feature the young voices of Seattle, and that we can open their minds to new possibilities with this space. When you look at how we're starting off, obviously we have Derek Bermel in there, but we also have some Seattle-based composers. Stephen Newby is among them. And then we have some good old friends that are coming back, Seth Parker Woods, Anna Klein. We're also commissioning Rina Ismail, so a South Asian-American composer. I think we're really broadening the spectrum, and when you look at the marathon that we have, we're really giving you an intensive dosage of some of the most exciting contemporary composers active today. And I think in the past, when we've interacted in an educational setting, especially with children and younger children, most organizations try to do that still with very, shall we say, a conservative repertoire, or repertoire that's possibly pre-filtered to be, you know, quote-unquote child-friendly. But my experience is that children are not nearly as pre-programmed as the older, more conservative generation of audience member. And children have a really wonderful way of interacting with contemporary repertoire. And my personal wish is that we can use this space to bring contemporary style of writing closer to the youngest generation so that they embrace it very early. And then we actually have a new generation of audience that lives with this contemporary repertoire much more easily, shall we say, than some of our more conservative older audiences do.
The Seattle Symphony right now is really in the middle of a transitionary period. You've just taken your position at the beginning of this season. You're looking ahead to Ludovic's departure. What is your vision for where the Seattle Symphony goes in the next 5 or so years? Where do you see the symphony heading now?
I think that I look at Seattle. I look at the United States, which is my adopted home since 2001. Actually, I came to the United States in 1989 to study, but I became a citizen in 2001. I look at the United States as this amazing project that offers multiculturalism a place where you can still all be part of the same society. And I know we're struggling with this right now, but I think that's a temporary struggle. And I want the Seattle Symphony in 10 years from today to better reflect our community here in Seattle, but also in the United States at large, both on stage, in the audience, and in the office. So we're talking about gender equality, we're talking about racial diversity, but we're also simply talking about diversity of thought between the younger and the older generations. And I think Seattle is the city where this can probably work faster and better than many other places, because Seattle is growing by leaps and bounds. And we have an influx of about 1,000 people a week, I think is the statistic. A young, educated, motivated workforce, constantly in tune with the newest technologies worldwide, with a global mindset. And to me, if you are a successful orchestra, you have to be relevant to your community, but you also have to be a global citizen, because classical music, or just music, forget classical, music today is a global business. That's when it becomes really interesting, when you're in tune with what's happening in Seattle, but also in Berlin or in Tokyo and Seoul. Then you really start getting into things that I find creatively challenging and also interesting. And, you know, it just so happens that that's the makeup of the people of Seattle. They are very globally interested and globally minded. So to me, that is the challenge I look forward to the most, is to get us even further down the road that we've already started traveling. The biggest challenge with Octave 9 to me is going to be that when people experience that space, I think some people are going to come to me and say, we want that in the recital hall, maybe not in the big Tabor hall, but we want that sound system in the recital hall because it's so amazing, and I have no idea how we're going to do that, which is a good problem to have. I think we're right now poised for a wonderful transition from Ludovic Molot, who's actually become a good friend of mine in a very short time, to Thomas Dausgaard, who I, of course, knew peripherally already in my days in Glasgow. And it's just a very, very exciting period at the Seattle Symphony, and I'm really proud that I'm here during that time.
That was Krishna Tyagarajan, President and CEO of the Seattle Symphony. Elena Dubinets is Vice President of Artistic Planning and Creative Projects. She said Octave 9 has already begun to expand the way the symphony thinks about its seasons and programming as a whole.
We are considering Octave 9 as an inherent part of the Seattle Symphony programming. It's not isolated from the rest of the programming in any way. In fact, we are now designing the seasons for the main stage with an eye towards Octave 9. We will be asking many of our guest artists and conductors and composers especially to work with us both on the main stage and in Octave 9 when they come for their performances on the main stage. We will be commissioning a lot of music from composers for both stages. In fact, we also have a recital hall in the building, so we will be incorporating all venues cohesively into our overall programming. And this is a major statement about what we will be doing here with this new venue. It will serve as a pipeline for projects that might eventually end up on the main stage. And on the other hand, conductors who have already been commissioned for full orchestra and for performances in our beautiful Tabor auditorium will also have a chance for their chamber music to be performed in Octave 9. And connections of this type are especially exciting because normally our audiences get to experience only one type of music, you know, and here we'll be offering them opportunities for full immersion into, let's say, an artwork of a certain composer. And it doesn't go only for contemporary composers. We'll be exploring masterworks better with the help of visual technologies and multimedia. That's why we are scheduling our adult lecture series for that space, because we'll be able to do more there aside from our regular pre-concert lectures that will continue in the main auditorium. We are also envisioning connecting the senses in so many ways for older repertoire. And I'll give you a curious example. This year we'll perform Gabrieli's sonatas for tiorbo and cello in an environment of an old Italian cathedral appropriate for, for the period when these pieces were created. And it will be both through the acoustics that will recreate there, and through visual elements, will be showing photographs from a cathedral in Italy, or maybe designing a video, so that people who are in the space for that performance could really experience it on so many levels. And it will be this type of immersive experience that we are so excited to offer.
And you'll be premiering launching Octave 9 in March with a 24-hour contemporary music marathon. What will that event be like for your audience?
Well, our audience will have to be willing to stand 24 hours actively listening to music. It will be performances nonstop, both regular instrumental performances and involving multiple types of technologies. We are subdividing this experience into three big chunks: nightfall, dreams during the night, and daybreak. And people will be able to come in and out as they wish. Again, the setup for each piece is going to be different. Musicians are not going to stay in the same place throughout. It's going to be really varied. So the audience point of view might change through the marathon. But most importantly, we want our audiences to experience really different types of music that exist now. And our goal for this marathon was to program music only by living composers, and many of them will actually attend the performances. And also, you know, we will have equal representation of men and women at that marathon, both as composers and as performers. And this is really important for us to make that statement, because we can't quite do it on the main stage to that extent due to the historical conditions. By now, the classical music canon has mostly consisted of music by male composers. And we are now breaking that boundary by commissioning more and by bringing more of other composers, which is really, really important for the mission of this Yale Symphony.
That was Elena Dubinets, Vice President of Artistic Planning and Creative Projects at the Seattle Symphony. I also checked in with Bermel, who, in addition to his residency in Seattle, is involved in a number of projects with contemporary music, including serving as Artistic Director of the American Composers Orchestra. He spoke about details of the upcoming program, including how the technology available in the venue adds to the experience, and also about what venues like Octave 9 can offer today's musicians and composers.
Well, I think Octave 9 is giving the orchestra the chance to present all kinds of music that they might not have the chance to present in Benaroya Hall, music that involves electronics, that involves possibly a more niche audience, music of many, many different styles and genres. And plus, they have this Meyer sound system installed there, so that allows for all kinds of acoustic environments. And as well, they have visuals there that were installed by a company called Bell and Whistle, which is a local company that does a lot of work in the commercial sector. But in this case, they've kind of created this very integrated visual environment, various visual environments that allow them to just present work that's multidimensional, that's both visual and audio aspect.
How did you work with these possibilities in curating the series for the spring?
The first thing I did was I tried to imagine a very wide variety of American music that could be presented in this venue. And they asked me to present two different concerts, one in March, very shortly after the opening of Octave 9, and one in April. So for the March 10th concert, which is very, very soon after the opening of the hall, I'm going to be performing a recital with the renowned jazz pianist Ethan Iverson. And the idea was to take a look at American music, but with a bigger lens. So thinking about the history of jazz and how it intersects with the history of classical music. So therefore, the representation is there from seminal composers like Duke Ellington and Leonard Bernstein, from the beginning of the century, and as well composers like Mary Lou Williams, James P. Johnson. And then moving through the 20th century into the 21st century with composers like Seattle-born William Bolcom and Paquito de Rivera on the jazz and Latin music side. And then up until composers who are coming up today, Steve Newby is writing a new work. Steve is a Seattle-based composer with a background in both classical music and gospel music. So he's writing a new work for us. And that's going to be a clarinet quintet that I'm going to perform with members of the Seattle Symphony. And then there are other composers from the jazz side, like Ethan himself, or like Jerry Allen, who just recently passed away. And of course, with my music, also featuring Seth Parker Woods, who's happens to be their one of their performers in residence this year. So we decided to do a little combo together. And the idea is to have this, you know, a concert that shows the trajectory of jazz and classical music, and it seemed just perfect for this venue.
And I understand in April as well, the symphony will be premiering one of your works that really takes advantage of the technology that's been brought in. How is that going to be brought in?
So the concert in April is called American Horizons. The idea of that concert was to explore how electronic sound mixes with acoustic sound. So again, we're featuring musicians from the Seattle Symphony, but now we're going to make use of the Meyer space, which allows you to create some kind of different soundscapes. It's a fairly small space, but it has dozens and dozens of speakers that are placed in different spots throughout the space, which allows you to have a kind of spatialized sound environment. So you can actually design the sonic experience, design how you hear the music, where the music is placed in the hall. And that also allows you to, you can design different acoustic environments so that you can have a quite prominent reverberation, which makes you feel like you're in a large hall or even a church. And then you can have almost no reverberation or none at all, which makes you feel like, you know, you're in a big carpeted padded room. So all the possibilities that you can use, you could use different combinations of those possibilities within one piece. So that allows you to do many, many things. There are Meyer spaces all around the world. And they're often just used in a purely practical sense to give a space a little bit of extra reverberation. But in this case, we're going to be really specifically designing the Meyer sound for each particular piece on the program. So we hope to get many, many different environments. And this concert features everybody from quite seminal composers in American music like Edgar Varèse to Steve Reich, one of the fathers of minimalist music, to composers from today like Mason Bates, Mary Queen Midgen, Nina Young, and Kaylee Lane Eaton, who's a Seattle native, who we're also commissioning a world premiere from. And then, of course, I'm writing a piece also involving the Seattle Symphony musicians, which is specifically for this space, and which will feature both the orchestra itself in recorded form brought into the space, along with the live musicians. That's what I think is exciting about having the possibility of working in a Meyer space and doing pieces that involve electroacoustic music, which really are involved with that space in between live acoustic music and recorded electronic music, or even live electronics, which are being created in the moment. So these pieces all involve different things. Some involve pre-recorded music, like the Steve Reich, where I'm going to be playing clarinet myself, along with 11 pre-recorded tracks of clarinet. And then there are other pieces, like Nina Young, where she's using something called an e-bow to create electronic sound in real time that's triggered by the vibrations of the piano. And then there are other composers like Mason Bates, who have a pre-recorded track that is played along with the piano solo, the acoustic piano solo, you hear this pre-recorded track come in, which is actually a track that was recorded by Alan Lomax, the noted musicologist who traveled all around America collecting folk songs. So you hear some of the sound of Lomax's old recording, which is part of Mason's piece. So I think what I'm trying to do in this concert is tie together the old and the new. It's almost like you hear recordings and then you hear meta recordings and meta recordings, you know, the sounds of old recordings coming back, the sounds of new recordings being made. And in my piece, which is partially inspired by the Martian landings that have recently that we've done on Mars. You know, one thing that I found very inspiring was the sound of Martian wind that you heard, which was actually sped up quite a bit from the actual sound that you hear on Mars. But when you speed up, you're actually hearing the wind blowing on Mars, which just seemed like such a crazy thing to be able to hear here on Earth. Like, we can actually hear a recording of the wind blowing on Mars. And it brings us closer to this very faraway place and very faraway environment. And so that felt like an interesting way in to writing a piece of music. And in this case, I bring the Seattle Symphony itself into this small space by pre-recording them and having the recording played in the Meyer space along with live instruments. These musicians are interacting with the sound of the Seattle Symphony, which we're recording beforehand.
You've been very involved in the contemporary music scene, exploring new sounds, new directions, and also promoting both other composers and other ensembles as they move forward in these areas. Looking at Octave Nine, how does this set an example for what other orchestras and ensembles can do and explore as they try to stretch their boundaries?
Well, I think the Seattle Symphony has, especially, you know, in the past 10 years, has just taken leaps and bounds in terms of being connected to their community, connected to what composers are doing in all genres, from rock and roll to jazz to electronic music to hip hop. They've really tried to connect with their community very strongly. And, you know, most of what composers do is connected to our community because we are just people living in the world today like any other people, like anyone else going to their job every day. We're trying to engage with the world around us. Composers always have. Artists always have. That's what artists do. We engage with the world around us and we create things from that and about that and inside that. You know, in a way, we can't escape being who we are and in the time period that we are. So it's really exciting for me to be working with an orchestra that is so interested in what's going on today and around them and in their community. There are so many different aspects of this residency that touch on what's happening in the Seattle community. And I'm going to be very involved with a project working with vets in Seattle. And also I'll be involved with a project working with kids with high school, very talented high school students who are young composers looking to improve their skills and to learn more about composition world. And to me, what I do normally as a performer, as a composer, and also as artistic director of the American Composers Orchestra in New York is very tied in with the kind of work that I'll be doing in Seattle, which is helping to make people aware of what composers are doing and how they fit into the larger picture of society and helping to make people more aware of their work. And that goes for composers in all different genres.
That was Derek Bermel, composer in residence of the Seattle Symphony. You can find more information on the symphony and its Octave 9 Reisbeck Music Center at seattlesymphony.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world each week on A Tempo. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support of the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.